Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with a great guest, Diane Southard, creator of Your DNA Guide. So welcome, Diane. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Bob. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too, because certainly, you know, DNA is a big topic these days, and I get a ton of questions that I can't answer. So hopefully you'll be able to answer the questions.
Okay, let's do it.
So the first question I have for you, because I know a lot of people kind of confuse things. They say I'm 100% Italian, and then they do their DNA and they find they're not. So what's the difference between culture, ethnicity, heritage?
Oh, such great questions. And I think it's so important to keep in mind all of those distinctions when we're taking a DNA test, because your genetics is really just one part of you. For some wild reason, we give DNA like all of this street cred, like it somehow represents you personally, specifically, ultimately, when it doesn't, not really. It's just another piece of who you are. But for some reason, we've just decided DNA is like the ultimate judge and jury on who we are. And it can really be difficult to get back those results that don't prove what you think you knew about yourself. And people can be thrown off. Their identity can even be thrown off by it. But in reality, your genetics is just one small part of who you are. The people you grew up with, the culture, the language, the food, all of that, I think, contributes at least equally, if not more so, to who you actually see yourself as, though obviously the DNA does play a big part.
Yeah. And, you know, some Italians get very upset when they find out they're not 100% Italian through their DNA. And I tell them that's not your culture. You know, your culture is your culture. And it's a different kind of thing. My next question is, because you mentioned it, what is a reference population?
Yes, this is a good thing to know for yourself. It's also a really good way to explain why you might not be seeing 100% Italian in your DNA test results. So a reference population has to do with a group of people that the testing company has gathered together and determined that these group of people represent a location. And they do that by looking at the family trees of those people. And usually they're looking for grandparents, all four grandparents, who lived within 60 miles of each other. That's kind of a pretty standard qualification to be part of a reference population. So then once they find a group of these people, then they test their DNA and they look for their similarities. What's different about this group of people than about other groups of people? And we begin to develop a signature, a DNA signature for that specific location. So the reference populations, when DNA first became available, autosomal DNA, that kind of DNA we're talking about that you get from both of your parents. So it started in about 2007. And in 2007, there were three reference populations. You could be Asian, African, or European. And that was it. And we were taking DNA tests and we were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. They know I'm 100% European. Like that was some like really big feat, right? And now we have hundreds or even sometimes thousands of these kinds of reference populations, depending on the database you're looking at. And we're getting upset because they named us as only, you know, 92% Italian when we know we're 100%, right? And so our standards have changed along with the populations of the reference populations the companies have been accumulating. But one key thing to remember about your testing company is that they don't have every reference population in the world. They don't. And so if you happen to be from a population that is not yet represented in their database, they aren't actually going to be able to tell you you're from there. And unfortunately, it'd be nice if the testing company tested your DNA and they were like, oh, we don't have your reference population. And they kind of like gave it back to you and said, maybe later, but that would make a really terrible product. So they don't do that, right? They put you into a different reference population, your best fit, or something that's relatively broad, right? And so when you look at your DNA test results and you're trying to evaluate them in regards to your family history that you know you have, it's good to keep this in mind. So for example, you may see some other parts of Southern Europe within your results, and you know because of your family history that you go entirely back to Italy. But again, perhaps the specific reference populations from your specific Italian communities are just not there. And so they've given you something else, something close. Now, it's very unlikely that they're telling you you're from Africa, right? Or Asia, because right. you're Italian, right? So it's good to kind of think about the big picture and think about these big population groups. Are you entirely from Southern Europe, for example? Or if you have if you do have some significant portion from like Eastern Europe or something, it could just represent something that's very far back in your family tree. So that's the other thing about ethnicity. Like, we're always trying to pin it onto our grandparents or great grandparents when the locations you see represented could represent individuals as many as 4,000 years ago. And none of them have the trees back that far.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's very interesting because my wife, she's half Sicilian and half Puerto Rican. And, you know, she pops up with all kinds of different things.
I bet.
Norwegian, for example. I mean, that kind of blew us away because mm-hmm. nobody in the near term was Norwegian that she could, you know, that we could find. And the other thing also is kind of goes into what you were talking about. I found out that I had a Swiss second great grandmother, Elisa Moore. Her father was in the army, the Swiss army, Swiss Guard in Naples. And that blew me away. However, that to that point, I don't see any Swiss in me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's if you think about where is Switzerland in Europe, right? And how long has Switzerland been a place? And so that's the other thing. A lot of this is really about, if you think about timing, because we have these very solid boundaries around these countries, but those are all imaginary. You know, it's not like there's actual boundaries around these countries. We are just drawing them on a map. I mean, sometimes there are actual mountains, right, that are boundary lines. And you can see in the genetics even that makes a big difference. To have an actual boundary does actually separate genetically one people from another. But if there's nothing, if it's literally a line on a map, there's no genetic distinction there, not really, because we haven't been living apart in these little countries for very long when you're talking about the grand scheme of things. So again, your genetics are reflecting a very long history of time, and we have this very finite view of time.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people forget that.
Yeah.
So now you, one of the things that you had sent me, you talk about the mango theory to explain some of this. So maybe you could briefly tell us what the mango theory is.
Sure. So I like to use all kinds of analogies to help us kind of understand these things. So this idea of timing is really important. So if you went today to your grocery store and you got a mango, you could probably say that this mango is from my town, right? You just purchased it at your grocery store. It was right there. Right. So for me, I might go down. I live in Utah. So I'd go down to my grocery store. I buy myself a mango. I got them at Costco the other day, actually, a whole case. They were delicious. And I take the mango home and it is a Utah mango. But did the mango grow here in Utah? No, definitely not. Right. We don't grow mangoes in Utah. So someplace along the line, it was somewhere else. Right before it got to me in Utah. And so we can trace a lot of our U.S. mango production actually to Brazil. So perhaps at some point in the not too distant past, really, that mango was hanging on a tree in Brazil. And I think at that point, all of us can confidently say it's a Brazilian mango, right? Like, it grew there. So somebody picked it off of a tree and then they put it in a crate and they put it maybe on a ship. And at some point, the ship was like in international waters. And if we were to ask ourselves, well, where is this mango from at that point? It's kind of hard to say. Like, is it still Brazilian, but it's headed for America? Is it American? Right. And so there's like these transition periods where people are moving and they have no homeland or whatever. And so when you're looking at the lifespan of this mango and you're asking yourself, where is this mango from? It really depends on when you're asking. At one point, it was a Brazilian mango. At one point, it was a Utah mango. So you have to ask yourself the same thing about yourself. I mean, most people right now, when you ask them, where are you from? If they aren't genealogists, they'll just say wherever they live, right? That's where they're from. Right. But almost all of us genealogists, we like to like rattle off all the things about where we're from, right? We have a little bit different perspective about from. But for most people, it's where you are right now, right? Where are you from? I'm from Utah right now. Well, where'd you grow up? Oh, well, that's a different. I grew up in Washington State. Right. And so we have to think of our ethnicity results in the same way. There are different timelines for these ethnicity results.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point. That really explained it really, really well when I looked at that. So big question, because I know it drives everybody crazy. Why do my DNA countries differ over time or by provider?
Yeah. Great question. This is something that really, I feel like, if we don't understand it, can undermine the validity of this kind of testing because it makes people feel like it's not, doesn't work or it's not real. So let me address first why you might get different results from different companies. So it has a lot to do with those reference populations we talked about. So different companies have different reference populations. So it's like kind of comparing apples to oranges. Like you think it should be the same. You're the same. You're submitting the same DNA, and we think in our heads they're going through the same process, and I'm not any different between companies, so why am I getting different results? It is really in large part because of the reference populations. They just can't give you the same results. They really can't because their data set is totally different. And it's not just reference populations. It also has to do with the algorithms, the statistics that they're using, how they're reporting results, things like that. Those all have different factors as well. And so one of the things I recommend that people do is do test at multiple companies and then try to take this broad overview of your results and see if you can find all of the similarities. So are there big percentages coming from very similar areas, even if they're named a little bit differently? Because that's the other thing. You have to choose a name for these places, and there isn't a standard naming practice, really. And so they could actually be talking about the exact same place, but they have two different names. So try to think through that. Look at the map section. A lot of times the map will have like a big circle over a whole swath, and the circle is actually in the same place for both companies, but they're talking about it differently. So that's another thing to look for. But as far as when the company updates your own results and changes your own results, this again mostly has to do with reference populations. As I said, in 2007, there were three reference populations. And we've just been building and building and building on these ever since. And so every time new data comes in, they recalculate your results in terms of this new data. And they've also improved their algorithms. And the more people that test, the better the math is. So the larger the database at your company, theoretically, the better the math can be because we get less skewed results, right? If you have a small data set, you can get very skewed results. So the bigger the data set, the more consistent the results. And you can see that as we look, there's been, you know, a few kind of informal studies, and you can do your own too, informal studies across the different companies. And so right now, Ancestry DNA and 23andMe have the largest databases. And in general, most people see the most consistency across those two companies because their data sets are bigger. So again, right, it just allows for that data to speak for itself and to kind of self-correct some of the maybe little inconsistencies that might be found.
Right. Now, does it also take into account how many people in these other countries or countries around the world actually do a DNA test? Because I know Italians are notorious for not doing a DNA test.
Yeah, for sure. Right. So like when you take a DNA test, like just as a regular consumer, at all of our companies, you can sign up to participate in research. And a lot of that research is in the realm of these ethnicity populations. So as you sign up, if you agree to be part of research and you get a lot of people from your community to agree to be part of research, then it allows the company to give you a better result for your community. So definitely that's affected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, my wife is, half Puerto Rican, and she's got tens of thousands of cousins. I mean, it seems like every Puerto Rican in the United States is doing a DNA test. It just makes me nuts because And I did Living DNA because they're based in Europe. So I figured, well, you know, the results will be, you know, closer. And in some instances it is, but their database is much, much smaller than the other guys. But, you know, it does kind of help. The other thing that I know people confuses me, certainly, and people ask me questions sometimes in my group is what is a haplogroup and how do I use that? And what really got me when I got the results from Living DNA, my mom, my maternal haplogroup comes from the Caucasus, almost 100%, like 97%.
Yeah. So a haplogroup is a different kind of DNA test result. So we've been talking this whole time with these ethnicity results about our autosomal DNA, which is the kind you get from both of your parents. A haplogroup refers to a different kind of DNA. So you as a man, you have two haplogroups, one for your direct male line, your Y DNA, and one for your direct female line, your mitochondrial DNA. So we ladies just have the mitochondrial DNA haplogroup. So a haplogroup is just a big word that means your deep ancestral group. And we name these deep ancestral groups with some kind of letter number combination. So haplogroups represent a deep ancestral origin for a single line in your family tree. So if you're personally tested, your mitochondrial DNA haplogroup represents your mother's 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 line. Your Y DNA haplogroup represents your father's 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 line. So haplogroup information in general is representative of a very deep connection. Okay, so let's just be clear. It's not really talking about anything really recent, usually. So you can get a haplogroup result, as you said, from Living DNA. They do provide mitochondrial and, if you're a man, Y DNA haplogroup results when you take their autosomal DNA test. You can get similar information from 23andMe when you take their autosomal DNA test. So it's like a bonus result, an extra kind of DNA test result that you get when you test at these two companies. If you want a full analysis, if you want to be able to match with other people on your Y or your mitochondrial, you'll have to test with Family Tree DNA and take their specific either Y DNA or mitochondrial DNA test. So for genealogy purposes, if you want to explore that direct male or direct female line, I always recommend you test with Family Tree DNA. They're really the only company offering you that matching that you need if you want to actually do genealogy. So back to your result with Living DNA, you have this mitochondrial DNA haplogroup. And what they do is they tell you your haplogroup. They tell you some cool information and background about your haplogroup. As you mentioned, yours is from the Caucasus region. Then they give you a map with percentages. Okay, that map with percentages actually represents other people, like living people who've taken the mitochondrial DNA test and where they are from. So if you're seeing almost 100% of the other people from the Caucasus region, this represents like living people who have ties like right now to that place. So again, it's not a representation of a historical connection, but it is a representation of a more immediate modern day connection. So those are two different things. But so it's interesting. Again, it's interesting any way you look at it, but it's interesting that you see all this connection to this region. So the thing about mitochondrial DNA is even if you share the exact same mitochondrial DNA as someone else, you could be related recently, or you could be related like 2000 years ago. And it's really hard to tell the difference. So even these people that show this connection to this place, it doesn't mean that you have a recent connection to this place or to these people, but you could be connected a very long time ago.
Yeah. So it's really, and I mentioned this to somebody, it's really just showing you where people in that haplogroup live today. Yeah. It doesn't mean that they live there always or
that's right.
Something like that. You know, like you mentioned the father line, my father line, is today mainly in Sardinia, Switzerland, a small little part of Spain, but mostly mountain people.
Okay.
You know, so that was very interesting to see that that they have, you know, this mountain type of thing going. Just a quick comment here from Steve.
Yeah, I like that, Steve. history and understanding the history of a place can really help you understand those DNA test results and why you might be seeing locations other than the ones that you see on your own family tree. Great point.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. So what are the biggest mistakes people make when they get their DNA results?
That's a good question. I think the biggest mistakes people often make are just jumping to conclusions. Like when you get your ethnicity results and you're not 100% Italian, a lot of people will just be like, oh, well then, you know, somebody cheated on somebody else and what, you know, and it's like, that's just not usually true at all. And so that's one thing I try to dissuade people from doing. Don't jump to conclusions when you get those ethnicity results.
So I have to ask you, because I didn't think of that. I didn't have this one written down, but it just popped into my head. What have you found in your own family that you went, wow, that's something?
Oh, I mean, well, my mom was adopted, so we've done lots of big discoveries on her line, definitely, for sure. But I've also made discoveries, littler discoveries, like with my dad's line. Like, for example, I didn't realize, I mean, it's right there in my family tree, but I'd never really made the connection necessarily that he has in his family, two brothers who married two sisters, which happens pretty often, but I didn't really recognize it until I saw the DNA test results. And I had some cousins who were sharing way more DNA than they should have with my dad. And I was like, what's with this? And so, you know, looking back, I see this double cousin relationship and it shows up in the DNA really strongly. And so it's, again, it was always on my tree. I had just never, they were, you know, they're the other lines, you know, you pay attention to your own lines, but I hadn't really realized that two brothers married two sisters and that was super easy to spot with the DNA results. So.
Yeah. And like you said, that wasn't really uncommon. My uncle, my great uncle, he actually married his, now this was, I guess they were in the States by then, but he married his first cousin. She passed away and he married her sister.
Yeah. Right.
But that, you know, that wasn't uncommon to marry sisters. First cousin was a little, you know, but to, that happened a lot in Italy, you know, in that respect. Now, my two children are adopted. Obviously, I've done their DNA tests. And interestingly enough, my son is fifth cousin or thereabouts of my wife. Because his natural father was born in Puerto Rico, or was from Puerto Rico. His parents were from Puerto Rico. My daughter is direct from Daniel Boone and Captain Morgan. And she's a dispenser from Princess Di's family, going way, way back.
Wow.
So that was a really interesting fun. And I kind of, you know, when I started digging into it, I realized that, you know, both her birth parents' families were here in America from the late 1600s, early 1700s. So I figured that, you know, I might find a tie back to England. I didn't really find a gateway ancestor per se with, with her. But I do, you know, I do see, like I said, I got her back to the dispenser family and she's, I don't know, 17th, 18th cousin. I don't know how many times it moved from Princess Di. But it was funny. She's, I guess she's 26 now. And I said to her a couple of years ago, you descend from Daniel Boone. And she said, who's that? I was like,
oh no.
What are they teaching in school these days?
Yeah.
But I also found an Italian link going back to Henry VIII's time. Huh. There was three brothers, the Bassano brothers, who were musicians from, I believe, Florence. They went to England as court musicians to Henry VIII. Obviously, they stayed there. They married English women. And, you know, Hence, you know, I found that the Italian connection way back then. So now you have an Italian connection, right, with Traversella?
Yes. So my grandmother, so this is my mom's adopted mother, so I don't have a genetic connection to Italy. But again, like we were talking initially, like it doesn't feel any different to me. Like I still feel like I'm connected there because she loved Italy. And my grandmother was half Welsh, half Italian. And she spent like her entire childhood with her Italian grandmother and just loved this woman. And they spoke Italian to each other all the time. That's all like, she remembers actually an argument between her parents the night before she started school, and her dad, who was Welsh, was like, you've got to start speaking English to her because she can't speak English. And her mom was like, nah, she'll be fine, whatever, like, you know, in that kind of offhand Italian way. And so my grandma remembers this argument, and she thought, oh, I guess I should like learn or speak English. I mean, she knew, like, her dad spoke English, but she spoke Italian all the time. And so I feel like it's a part of who I am also. Her mother was a first generation American, came with her mother when she was a child from Traversella is where she grew up. And so I mean, all my growing up years, I heard stories of Traversella. I worshiped the place just as much as my grandmother did, and heard all the stories and all the connections. And so I had my grandma's DNA tested, and at MyHeritage, I found a cousin, and this person was actually from Traversella. And so we started communicating, and she sent me pictures of her family, and she went down to the courthouse for me and like dug through records and things. And it was just a beautiful, fun connection to make. And while I have been to Italy, I have not gone all the way up to Traversella, which is way up, you know, northern Italy, up way up in the Alps, my grandma used to say. And so it is still my goal to go there one day, but it is, every bit a part of me as much as anything could be. I don't think having any DNA from there would make any difference to me. I still feel really connected.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And, you know, I tell everybody that when they're making a trip to Italy, I've even had some friends who say, well, I don't know if I want to go to the hometown. There's nothing there. They don't know me. And I tell them, but it's not about people knowing you, although they come out of the woodwork. But it's a whole different experience going to the hometown where you know your grandparents, yeah, or your great-grandparents or whoever walk down those streets.
I agree.
And you see people who look like you, you know, it's incredible. I don't know about you, but I don't believe any of this stuff is accidental, especially for those who are doing it a long time. I really feel that the ancestors want to be found. And there's been too many things, too many stories I've heard that just can't be a coincidence when people are in the hometown or doing something like that. So for someone who either just did their DNA and they're waiting for the results or thinking about it but haven't done it or afraid that, you know, somebody's going to, you know, tell the police about them, what advice do you have for people just starting out?
Well, if you're just starting out, the first piece of advice I have for you is that if you haven't yet tested, know that you will find things that you maybe didn't expect. And it's really important to understand that going in, that, you know, everybody thinks that their family's boring and that there's nothing to find out, right? But more and more and more people do find out things that change the way they see themselves or change the way they see their family or their parents or grandparents. And so it's important to understand going in that that's a possibility before you test. But also know that you are the only one of you. Like genetically speaking, there will never be anyone who ever lives or anyone who has ever lived who has your unique mix of DNA. And so if you don't test and capture that record, when you pass, it will be gone forever. And that takes away part of this beautiful tapestry that your family is trying to weave. And it it limits future generations from exploring more fully your life and the life of your ancestors. And so it's a really important record to have if you are at all interested in family history or preserving the past. You are a significant part of that. And so considering your place, I think it's really important to document yourself and make sure that your story, your genetic story, is being told. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, and you know, I didn't. I should have had my mom do it, but I didn't. But I think it's also important. You know, if you could get parents, you get grandparents, it's even better. The more people that you can get to do it in your family is even better. And you know, you mentioned surprises. I have you know, two really interesting stories. One is a good friend of mine. He tested and he found he had an older half brother that he never knew existed.
Yep.
And they've become close, and they, you know, they see each other and everything. The really interesting one was my second cousin, and somebody had contacted me. She had done, I don't, she hadn't tested yet, but we hooked up somehow. And she said, I think, you know, I think I'm related to you somehow. Oh, actually, no, she had tested with a different company. I said, well, do Ancestry. I said, if, because I didn't do that company. If you do Ancestry, it's a bigger database, and, you know, we'll figure it out. Well, she did. And she came back as a second cousin. And I'm like, wait a second here. I don't know who you are. So now I'm sitting here going, all right, which one of my cousins, you know, and I kept thinking it was on my mom's side. I found out it was on my father's side, my cousin, and my second cousin and her two siblings had all done Ancestry. So I knew they were going to find out. So I contacted Donna and I said, did you see? And she said, I did. And I said, do you know anything? And she said, the only thing I can remember is my mom crying in the bedroom for 2 weeks when I was about 4 years old. So obviously they knew. Her sister was adopted, and again, same thing. You know, they've talked, and the men. You know, it's obviously not her fault, right? And things, what happens happens. But they lived not that far away from her for years and years and years. So Steve had a question here, and then I have a couple other questions to pop up.
Yeah. So Steve, your 2x great grandmother, who's a foundling, autosomal DNA can help you find your 3x greats or closer. So that's who you're looking for. You're looking for a set of 3x great grandparents. So autosomal DNA can help you. It will help you even more if you have an older generation available to be tested. So if your mother is still around or any of her siblings to be tested, that would be ideal. We always want to test the oldest generation first. But even with just yourself, it could be helpful. The most helpful other person to test is who I call your best known match. So your best known match is going to be another descendant of your great-great-grandfather. So your great-great-grandfather, the foundling, if he had more than one child, you want to find a descendant of one of the other children to take a DNA test along with you. That person would be your third cousin. Okay, so you and your third cousin then can really dive in to your DNA test results and find the matches that have to do with this particular missing 3x great grandparent couple. So the more third cousins you can get tested from this ancestor, the more complete your research will be and the easier it will be.
Oh, that's great. That's super. We have another question from Laurie.
Okay, so can you get regional DNA information such as the south or north of Italy? And it depends on who you test with. So if you test with family tree DNA, no, not really. But if you test with MyHeritage or with Ancestry or 23andMe, all of those do break down Italy into multiple parts depending on the company. Now, whether or not your DNA will identify with one of those multiple parts, I don't know. Again, it depends on exactly where you're from and if they have a reference population from your place and all of those factors. But there's a really good chance that you would get something regional back from one of those three companies.
And then we have a question from Pamela.
Okay, you have Italian and Polish that presents on Ancestry and 23andMe, that there's not a single Italian or Polish relative, Scottish, Irish, and English. Okay, so number one, Pamela, what is the percentage? If it's below 5%, you know, maybe it's real, maybe it's not real. Again, it's difficult to tell. But if it's over that, if it's over 5%, again, think about timelines. Again, this could represent a ancestor way back, thousands of years, way before you'd even be able to find records.
So how does, you know, someone like 10 generations ago or something, how does that present itself in the DNA?
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? So
yeah.
you are an amalgamation of the DNA of all of your ancestors, right? But if you go back to those, you know, 10 generations ago, I mean, we think of our family tree going out like this, like indefinitely, but it doesn't go out indefinitely, right? Because there just aren't enough people out back that far. And so you start to kind of fold back in on yourself. We call this pedigree collapse. It happens for everyone. When it happens to you sooner rather than later, it can create some interesting DNA patterns. But all of us at some point have to do this because there just aren't enough ancestors to keep going back. And so even back at that distant generation, you have this smaller pool of genetics that's being passed down. And so it allows it to be a little more concentrated moving down the tree. You just have leftover parts at every generation from these locations that just stay with you, essentially, in these small amounts.
And I don't know if you've ever been to any of the old manor houses in England and stuff like that. When you see the pictures of, you know, the Duke from 1600 and his son from 1630 and his son from 1650, and and they all look exactly the same.
Yep.
The same. But what I found, I'll send it to you, and I'll post it when I do the blog. There's a portrait of my eighth great grandfather, Prince Marino, and I looked at this picture and I said, "Boy, I have a photograph of myself that's similar," and so I made it a black and white photo and I put it side by side and I went over to my wife because she would tell me if I was nuts or not. And I said, "Look at this. This is, you know, my great grandfather." And we don't look exactly alike, but certain things like especially eyebrows, eyes, and the chin, it just blew me away. You know, we're talking. And the photo was about the same time. I was probably about 30 years old. He was probably about 30 years old when this portrait was painted. And the similarities just were striking, you know?
Yeah.
For anybody who wants to get the guide or contact you or get to your website, where do they go?
Yeah. So if you are interested in that, it's actually at yourdnaguide.com/ethnicity-estimate. So ethnicity-estimate is the link. And that's a PDF guide that really tries to go through and explain some of the things I was talking about today to help you understand why you see different percentages when you do see different percentages. And we also have a series of tours through each DNA testing company. So we're offering a coupon that we'll post here for you. Again, it's the coupon code is, let me just make sure I get it right. Italian Roots is the coupon code if you want to get a little discount on that tour. So our tours take you through each aspect of our DNA testing companies and help you understand how to navigate them, what to click on, what not to click on, what all the things mean. So you have a lot more confidence when dealing with your DNA test results because you know how to get around within the website. So those are our tours, again, available for every DNA testing company and that free guide. So
Yeah, and I'll put all the links in, they'll all be on the blog and everything, so it'll be quite clear, and I'll overlay it, you know, when I do the final edit. So before we go, I have one final question from Antonio.
So Antonio, when I am thinking about getting someone to take a DNA test, it's all about information and inspiration. So the information part is, like you said, they do need to understand and be aware that I think what you're hinting at, any children they may have created at some point in their life could be found. And that's a fact, and they need to understand that before they move forward. But essentially, no one does anything for intellectual reasons. So you can give them all the information in the world, and it's not going to change their mind. The only reason people take action is because of inspiration, because they need to feel something. So again, you have to help them understand that their record, their DNA record, is essential in the tapestry of your family history research, that they represent something totally unique that only they can contribute in this way. And so it really is about helping them see their role in preserving the past and in pushing that story of the past out into the future generations and helping them see how important that is and how important their role in doing that is. The other option you could do is you could do just a Y-DNA test. So any men in your family who are a little bit reticent. So a Y-DNA test can't identify anyone uniquely because you have the same Y-DNA as your brother, your cousin, your father, and lots of other people in your direct paternal line. So that's sometimes an easier pill to swallow. And it does still give you that direct male line record, which is often very helpful in a family tree. So sometimes you might want to start with that Y-DNA test and kind of get them warmed up and reassure them that, you know, it can't actually identify them uniquely if that's a record that you need from that particular person.
Well, that was great. Well, thank you so much. This has been like really, really informative. And I encourage people to take advantage of the link when I put it up there. It'll be on the blog when I post it. So anybody listening that wants to see it will find it there. And also we'll have the replay up on YouTube. So thanks again, Diane. I appreciate it so much.
Thanks for having me, Bob. Take care.